It must be what every medical researcher dreams of.
The ability to take something with the prospect of going into the patient population, something that we've developed at the ground level, is very, very exciting.
Today, we have just such a story of a groundbreaking, game-changing discovery that could really help those who suffer from celiac disease.
Do I miss a donut? Yes. I mean, if someone said, hey, take this pill and you could go eat a donut, are you kidding me? Like, I'd line up for that pill around the block.
This is the UW Medicine Pulse with Marty Reamer. Real-world stories of the discoveries being made at UW Medicine and the impact they're having on people here in the Pacific Northwest and around the world.
I'm going to just
Singer-songwriter Camille Bloom is in her third-floor home studio on Capitol Hill waiting for her next student to arrive. When she's not recording or touring, she teaches. She's got her guitar out and she's playing one of her originals. And just from the lyrics, you probably wouldn't guess what it's about.
I can't begin to unravel the chains that I've traveled so far with all these years. And I can't stop choking on choices.
It's a song called Here You Come Again, and it's about gluten intolerance.
Here you come again. You are louder each time till it hurts.
Isn't it a little strange to you to have written a song about gluten intolerance?
No, because it was such a huge part of my life. I didn't even know exactly what was coming out when I wrote it, of course. And then as I was writing it, I was like, oh my God, this is about me. You know, here you come again. I'm sick again.
Here you come again. You are out of reach time till you shout.
Camille has celiac disease, an autoimmune disorder where the ingestion of gluten leads to inflammation and damage of the small intestines.
Similar to the way your body would mount an attack against a virus or a bacteria, that would be an appropriate reaction.
Shirley Paskey is a UW Medicine gastroenterologist.
Whereas in the case of celiac disease, the body's a little bit confused, and it thinks that, the intestine is actually the enemy.
Basically, if you're among the 1% of the population that has celiac disease and you eat gluten, you get really sick.
The caveat with celiac disease is that of the 1%, only a very small fraction are diagnosed. Many people go without a diagnosis or have had their symptoms attributed to other things like irritable bowel syndrome or just saying that they have a, quote, sensitive stomach.
Gluten, by the way, is a protein that's often associated with wheat.
Gluten is nearly ubiquitous in our diet, and you're absolutely correct in saying that it's found in wheat, but it's also found in barley and rye, as well as any other food products that can be contaminated with those grains in the processing.
And it's those trace amounts, that contamination, that can make life so incredibly challenging for someone like Camille Bloom, who has celiac.
How sensitive are you?
Oh my God. I can't even do stuff that's in a shared fryer. Like, so they say, oh, this doesn't have any gluten in it, but we fry it in the same fryer that we do our chicken strips or whatever. No way. Like, I can barely eat out.
The talk of gluten intolerance, gluten sensitivity, celiac disease is everywhere these days, and the terms tend to be used interchangeably. And this can be confusing, because according to Dr. Paskey, there's a definite distinction between people who say they are gluten sensitive and those that have celiac.
I think that what we're learning now is that there's actually a spectrum of what we call gluten-related disorders, of which celiac disease is one of those. The difference between celiac disease and non-celiac gluten sensitivity is we don't have markers for those. Where celiac disease, there's a measurable immune response that can be found in terms of antibodies in the blood, as well as damage if we were to look at the intestines itself. People with non-celiac gluten sensitivity don't mount these objective findings.
And even though the public might be a bit confused by that distinction between celiac and gluten sensitivity, Dr. Paskey points out that that confusion has actually been somewhat beneficial for celiac patients.
You know, I would say it's plus and minus, actually. So some may look at it as an individual with celiac disease and say, oh my goodness, there's all these people, they don't actually have celiac disease. And then you've got people who are like, oh, come on, are you one of those types of people? Whereas on the other side of this, you know, the market for gluten-free products has expanded into a multi-billion dollar industry because there are a whole heck of a lot more people who are demanding gluten-free foods. And this ends up being beneficial to people who do have bona fide celiac disease. 'Cause I figured it out.
The only treatment for celiac, for now, is to adhere to a strict gluten-free diet. And that is tough, because as Camille Bloom or anyone with experience with celiac will tell you, that stuff is hard to avoid.
It's in orange juice, Marty. We could go and I could show you, like, modified food starch in orange juice to thicken it.
And you tell me to stop it, and I tell you to leave me, just leave me alone.
I mean, from the age of 9, I was being rushed to the ER with stabbing chest pains, like, throughout my whole life, like, thinking I was dying, not knowing what was going on.
Go!
And although she's been living with this condition long enough to have adapted to it and even to some degree accepted it, there are times, still quite often actually, where she wishes there were some sort of an answer.
Yeah, I think the hardest part is being a guest in someone's home and having to turn down what they've lovingly prepared. Like, I've had people in Europe who have created an entire meal that they thought was gluten-free, that they researched, like they spent hours and they prepared this food, and then instead of real butter, they used a fake butter because that's what they had. And I have to look at it. I have to literally say, oh, I'm just curious if you can show me what, and they show it to me and I say, I'm so sorry, I can't eat what you're serving. Oh, it's probably one of the worst feelings to do that to someone.
So finding a cure, or even just a pill that would allow her to lower her guard at times when it comes to gluten, would mean, well, what would it mean?
I'm like, I got goosebumps on my left arm, if that means anything. I'm like, it would be life-changing.
I can't begin to unravel the chains that I've traveled so far with all these years.
To find that pill, that treatment, Ingrid Swanson-Pultz, a senior research fellow at the University of Washington's Institute for Protein Design, took a rather non-traditional path, and it began with an undergraduate science project.
While I was in graduate school, I founded a team of undergraduates who participate in the International Genetically Engineered Machine Competition. It's called iGEM.
Can you all please join me in welcoming to the stage the University of Washington?
iGEM is a competition in which undergraduates, advised by graduate students, postdocs, and faculty, design, build, and test a new biological system or new biological molecule.
Good morning, everybody.
Over the course of the summer.
So at the start of the summer, we had a large group of students come together at the University of Washington.
And then in the fall, they go to MIT and they present their work. And they compete against teams from all over the world for different prizes.
And so I couldn't be more excited to share with you guys what we achieved in our presentation. We're calling it Make It or Break It, Diesel Production and Gluten Destruction, the Synthetic Biology Way.
So in 2011, we had a few students who had friends with celiac disease. And so they wanted to make a therapeutic for this disease. And at that time, we were, and since, we were working with the Baker Lab, David Baker's lab on campus that does protein structure and design, which is where the whole Institute for Protein Design was birthed from. So we sat down and thought, how can we use the sophisticated computational protein design tools that are developed and used in the Baker Lab to address celiac disease?
So gluten intolerance is quite a common problem, presenting itself in about 1% of the population worldwide. Unfortunately, the only current treatment for gluten intolerance is total elimination of gluten from the diet.
I can't cancel out all the noise, your explosion deploys if I plug.
So this is not someplace you'd typically go to buy food.
Right. I just basically look at it and go, oh, gonna get sick, fight, you know. But that's almost all grocery stores. You know, there are things I can eat. I can eat those apples.
You know? One thing.
Yeah. Oh, that section, just don't even walk down it, probably. Like, all these things are thickened, or unless they have some sort of a gluten-free option for me in the cake aisle.
The problem is that human digestive enzymes can't completely break down gluten because gluten is highly enriched in amino acids that are very difficult for human digestive enzymes to break down. And as a result, gluten passes through the stomach and into the intestine only partially digested. Nobody's bodies can digest these difficult-to-digest gluten fragments. But in most people, these fragments of gluten just pass right through with causing no problem. But people with celiac disease mount an inflammatory immune response against these gluten fragments in the intestines. And that inflammation is what causes all of the problems associated with this disease.
And get this. When I first figured out my gluten allergy, I was so excited because I thought, well, I can have Rice Krispie treats, right? There's no gluten in a marshmallow or butter.
Yeah.
And I went and got it. Well, I had the worst reaction and realized it's because they have barley malt syrup in their Rice Krispies, because that's what makes them so good. And it was the barley malt that...
And so we thought, you know, if you could have an enzyme that similar to your digestive enzymes, but that had the property of breaking down these highly problematic regions of gluten in the stomach before they can get to the intestines, then you would prevent the disease. In fact, we're not the first with this idea. There are other groups that have looked at the use of enzymes to break down gluten in the stomach. But the problem is that because gluten is such a difficult protein to break down, and the stomach is such a harsh environment to work in, the identification of a naturally occurring enzyme has been very difficult. So we started with a completely different approach. And instead of trying to identify an enzyme that would break down gluten, we started with an enzyme template that works very, very well in what you would consider to be stomach conditions. So in an acidic environment and at higher temperatures. So that was our approach, and our students made some mutations to that original template enzyme to engineer an enzyme that, in fact, had some activity against these immunogenic gluten fragments, and it did so in stomach conditions. And that was very exciting. It was an amazing prototype. So we went to the iGEM competition the fall of that year.
The grand prize winner of 2011 is University of Washington.
And the UW team won that year out of over 165 teams from around the world, which was great. It was actually the first U.S. team ever to win the award. So when we came back from iGEM, our students did a couple of more experiments, and we published a paper, a manuscript on the enzyme. And then they all went off to graduate school. So, and at that point, I was graduating from graduate school. And I sat down with David Baker and the other advisors that were involved in this project, and we said, you know, this enzyme that was developed by our students, this was in 2012, this enzyme that was developed last year, it really has some promise. Somebody should take this forward. And that somebody was me. Actually, if you're interested, this is the enzyme.
Outside her office and lab in the University of Washington's Health Sciences Complex, Ingrid proudly shows off a plastic 3D model of the enzyme that she and her team developed, which has been dubbed Kumamax.
So this is a structure of the enzyme right here. The gluten fits perfectly into the business end of the enzyme.
Oh my goodness.
And then the enzyme breaks it apart. So now this fragment is not predicted to stimulate the immune system.
At least, that's how it was predicted to work on paper. But the proof is in the pudding. Or in this case, not the pudding, but a slice of bread.
Our undergraduate students had used really rudimentary methods to measure its effects. And so I used, I started to really delve into the computational design. And with the help of my research assistant, we generated new variants that were orders of magnitude more active than the original enzyme. And then we also used a variety of new tests. We took whole bread. So we went to the grocery store and we bought whole wheat bread, and we came back to the lab and we mashed it up in artificial saliva. And then we acidified it by adding hydrochloric acid. And so using those methods, we determined that the enzyme is capable of breaking down over 99.97% of the gluten in gastric conditions in only 30 minutes, which is important because that represents the approximate lag time in the stomach after you eat before food starts to be released into the intestines.
So when you say 99.97% of the gluten is taken out, is that good enough?
That's a really good question. There have been a number of clinical studies that have been done where the threshold level of gluten is analyzed in the stomach. And that amount appears to be less than 10 milligrams, which is really a vanishingly small amount of gluten. So the amount of gluten that you would find in accidental gluten ingestion, because one of the issues in celiac disease is that gluten contamination is very, very common. So a typical amount of accidental gluten ingestion is about a gram. So to get from 1 gram to 10 milligrams is 99% degradation. So you really need that 99% degradation. Of course, that is only upon ingestion of a gram. If you're looking at ingestion of 8 grams, to put this in perspective, a slice of high gluten bread has about 4 grams of gluten. So if you were to accidentally be served a sandwich that has 2 slices of high gluten bread instead of gluten-free bread, you would be exposed to 8 grams of gluten. To get that down to that 10 milligram level is about 99.9% degradation. So you really do need that high level of degradation. Here you come again. You are out
of reach, time, so you shout. So it works, at least in the lab.
Yeah, so we have, we've done these in vitro studies. We've done in vivo studies, which means that we've found that it works in using a rodent model of gastric digestion. And so the next step is to undergo those large-scale toxicity tests that are required by the FDA to go into humans.
And even there, she's convinced that this Kumamax enzyme of hers will be able to clear all hurdles.
We don't anticipate it to be toxic. But, of course, that's something that any drug has to pass.
When you say you don't anticipate it to be, what do you base that on?
Well, the enzyme that we've engineered is a protein. And it's made entirely out of naturally occurring amino acids. And so it's really, compositionally speaking, no different from any protein you would eat in your diet. And the enzyme is staying in the GI tract because that's where it acts. We wouldn't expect it to be absorbed by the body. We expect it to be digested like any other protein that you eat.
Eventually, the end product, once it's commercially available, will be a pill that a person like Camille Bloom with celiac would simply take before a meal as a precaution.
The biggest danger sites for celiac patients is when they're out to eat or traveling or at a friend's house, when they can't be completely in control of the generation of their food. But certainly when they make their own food, there could be slip-ups. They could buy something that is actually contaminated with gluten. It's actually interesting because celiac disease is the only disease for which the treatment is entirely out of control of the person, unless they make all of their own food from complete scratch.
Even if it meant that by taking that pill, the times that I would have been gluten poisoned at a restaurant, say, that's fairly sure they're gluten free, but like I could take it to make sure, I would change my entire life. I can't begin to unravel the chains that I've traveled so
far with all these years. Something that I never experienced when I was doing my thesis that has been quite interesting is people with the disease contacting me. people with the disease, they learn about our research and they contact me and they say, you know, you're really suffering. You're doing great work. Keep at it. I want to participate in your clinical trials. We had a sixth grader on the East Coast who heard about our work. She has celiac disease. And she held a gluten-free bake sale and sent us the proceeds to fund our research. It was $500. It's very, very touching.
According to Ingrid, clinical trials could begin within the next year. To find out more about Ingrid Swanson-Pulse's work and how it's progressing, visit our website, uwmedicine.org/pulse. I want to thank Ingrid, Dr. Shirley Paskey, and Camille Bloom for joining us on the show today. If you'd like to know more about Camille Bloom's music, we invite you to visit our website for that as well, uwmedicine.org/pulse. While there, be sure and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes to get every episode delivered to your phone or tablet for free as soon as they are released. UW Medicine Pulse is produced by Tina Knoll, production assistance from Aaron Gervais. I'm Marty Reamer. Thanks for listening.